Welcome to The Sync Report, the intersection between filmmakers, content creators, and musicians, where we host a weekly conversation with some of the biggest names in film, television, music, and entertainment. Meet industry experts and top-level musicians as we pull the curtain back on music placement and scores, building vital relationships and providing real opportunities for our listeners. Listen to indie filmmakers and content creators present their latest productions and describe specific scenes as they consider music submitted by our audience. Hosted by film star and musician Colin O'Donoghue and his co-host, the godmother of independent films, Rose Ganguza, and The Sync Report's creator and music supervisor, Jason P. Rothberg. Don't forget, tell your friends about us and remember to rate, comment and subscribe to The Sync Report on Apple and across all platforms. Music is the difference between a good film and a great one. This is Milfredo 7 and I just got to say while I've got the mic that the money I get for this show defo does not justify the inconvenience it puts on my life. Serious.
Welcome to The Sync Report with my friend Colin O'Donoghue.
All right, Paula, what's going on? There seems to be a lot of buzz backstage. There's somebody new joining the cast.
Well, before we introduce our guest, there's someone else I'd like to introduce to everyone.
Oh?
We've got a brand new co-host.
A new co-host?
Yeah.
Wait, Rose?
Well, we've got Rose and
Jason.
You.
Yeah,
Got an award-winning Irish actor, Colin O'Donoghue, is joining us.
Oh, my God, what?
I know.
Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, I love this guy. He's fucking brilliant. What are you talking about?
Have you seen him in his Irish TV shows and movies, or have you seen him play Duke Philip of Bavaria in the hit Showtime series The Tudors? Do you know he worked with Anthony Hopkins?
Hannibal.
Legendary.
Do you know, he's also worked with one of my favourite actresses, Angela Bassett.
Oh, I love her.
And you also know that in 2012, he was a regular on the hit ABC series Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, Kevin's favourite TV show. Yeah.
Playing Captain Hook.
That would be my wife.
He says that, but I know he's like recording it secretly.
And my kids are going to love this. In 2018, Colin was in the DreamWorks Animation Netflix series Trollhunters, which was created by none other than Guillermo del Toro. My kids love that show. And he's taken up that role again for the follow-up Trollhunters Rise of the Titan. And on top of that, recently you might have seen him as Lieutenant Gordo in the Disney Plus adaptation of Tom Wolfe's novel The Right Stuff.
Okay, I might have missed out, but I know what I'm watching tonight.
And now, guess what?
Tell me.
He's joined us as a co-host.
No way. Colin O'Donoghue is here right now, tonight.
He's right here. Shall we welcome him to the show?
Yeah, bring Colin O'Donoghue out to our stage. Unbelievable.
When does this guy have time for groupies?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. What an introduction.
Colin!
Colin.
I didn't even realize I'd done half that stuff. It sounds a lot better when you said.
Well, that's what we pay her the big bucks for, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, Colin, I am so over the moon. I couldn't be passing the mic to a cooler individual. Obviously, your acting is bar none, but you're also an incredible musician. Yeah, you have all the tools. Man, the Sync Report is all yours.
Thank you very much. Well, hello, I'm Colin O'Donoghue, and I am the host of The Sync Report. Let me introduce my co-hosts this evening. Please help me welcome the godmother of independent film, Rose Ganguza.
So nice. Thank you. So nice to have you aboard, Colin.
Thank you very much, Rose. Thank you. And music supervisor extraordinaire, Jason P. Rothberg.
Thank you.
Yay.
So it's great to be here, guys. Thanks a million for having me. Rose, how are things in New York?
Inching back. We're trying to keep a positive spirit despite the cold.
Ooh, is it cold?
Certainly is. Well, I'm excited. If you come here, we can hang out.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Well, I'd like to welcome Milfredo, DJ Milfredo, to the stage as well.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, mate.
How are you?
Good.
I'm really happy you're here, but I was the only one that had an accent, and they were all gone out the window, mate. Yeah, all those Americans loving my accent. Now I'm just a West Country yokel. Now you're on board, so yeah. Well,
I don't know. I suppose I could probably sound like that. I guess if you want me, me to sound more like you. hello, my lover.
There it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Do you know what? I was watching a pirate film the other day, and that was a farming film. That's right. The guy was like something. Ooh ah. Said nobody in Cornwall ever. Ooh ah. No one ever said that except the Wiggles, of course. Hereford, thank you. Paula knows.
That's where they say you are.
You are, my lover. Yeah. But yeah, good to have you on board, mate. Really is. I've just been still DJing last weekend, and everybody's still got post-COVID chaos going on. Anyone who goes out for a festival at the moment are just going overboard. So, trying to keep me distance, but as soon as people are about 9 pints in, it just all goes out the window. Everybody forgets that there's a pandemic on. But there you go. That's the beauty of binge drinking.
I'm hoping you'll get
a very British phenomenon, I do believe.
I'm pretty certain it's something that we experience here as well.
Good. But yeah, good to have you on board, man. Looking forward to rolling with you, definitely.
Thanks, lad. Me too. Well, look, let's welcome to the stage Kevin Sharpley. Come on, Kevin.
Yes. Man, I'm going to have to work on my accent. That's what I'm going to have to do now. So, you know, fit in with the new lot. So it's
you
great
got the accent.
You.
We need a bit of Americana. We don't hate all of America.
From this side.
Wow.
I feel like I should do an accent for every person. That's probably what
you don't have to.
Oh, that's challenge. All right, we have a real actor on stage. Challenge.
All right, like, Governor.
Brooklyn. Oh, no. Oh, Milfredo. Oh, no.
Yeah, there you go. And I just want to make this clear. My wife is the big Colin O'Donoghue fan.
Listen, that's what they all say. That's what everybody says.
So it's a great, great addition to the show. And I'm looking forward to working with you. And, you know, we're super excited to have you as an animated self, as we are for everybody else. So really looking forward to everything.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And I'd like to welcome now co-producer Paula Flack. Come on, Paula, how are you?
Hello, I'm all right, thank you.
Good,
I'm
good.
I hope you enjoyed the introduction there.
I did, it was excellent.
It took
was really
ages to write that out.
Oh, did it?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
It's only because
she
has 13 children. She's that woman that lives in a boot.
Yeah.
Have you had your fifth cup of tea yet?
I have, actually. I might even have had six today.
Oh, wow.
Terrible.
A cuppa.
Stay British with my cup of tea.
Steady.
With milk in. I've started working with our new intern today.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, you and Stacey. Oh, sorry. What am I doing? Sorry.
No, you can jump in. Jump in, Jason.
I'm jumping,
seat,
baby.
Jason. Yeah, so we've got the first intern, Saoirse, is helping out with...
Feel free to have a show before we die. Jesus Christ.
A full-time job in itself.
Yeah.
So hopefully there'll be lots of posts on Twitter coming up in
the
next week and forever after.
And here's the guy who sold us the sound machine.
I'll retweet them all.
Lovely. That's what I like to hear. And Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us, should we call out our social medias?
We are all over social media. We're on Instagram, The Sync Report Show. We're on Facebook, The Sync Report.
Twitter.
We are on Twitter, Sync Report. We're on YouTube, The Sync Report Show.
Twitter.
And we are on LinkedIn. So you can find us all over those. And we're on Clubhouse every Sunday for listening sessions.
Oh my God, this Sunday? How exciting.
Come and join us.
Wait, 9
p.m.
is that
UK time.
Every Sunday?
Every Sunday.
Every
we
Sunday.
We are musicaholics.
This is why they asked me to host, you know what I mean?
There's no flies on you, man.
No, no flies on me.
I'm on MySpace.
Okay, moving on. That was nice, Paula.
Well, please welcome Jennifer Herbig, who is also in our music department working alongside with Jess. Welcome, welcome. To make sure all of our indie artists have their music cleared properly, metadata is intact, etc.
Wow.
Hiya, Jennifer.
Hiya, Colin. Thanks for welcoming me. And it's really exciting to have you join all us crazy creatives.
When Jennifer said that, Colin, I just saw like 1,000 emojis with hearts in their eyes. That was so beautiful.
That would be pretty accurate. It would be.
Holy mackerel.
Anyway, stuff is great. It's great. I'm a little bit of an insomniac, so I'm working on pure adrenaline right now. And yeah, I really enjoy speaking to all our talented artists and writers that we spotlight on the Sync Report, making sure that they have all their stuff in line, their metadata, all the boring stuff that we need to keep the show in tip-top order and running. And yeah, I just need to warn them about all the craziness they're about to get into. But kidding, of course, but it's partly. But it's fun. It's super fun. And yeah, I love it. They're my community. I'm a writer and always working on new songs as well. So working with them is just inspirational, and they're my people.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, thank you for all the hard work you're doing. And I can't wait to hear all the artists that we're going to have on.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Colin.
Well, welcome Jodie Lynn Tulevi, who has been working tirelessly on all the graphics for our guests and social media promotions. Hi, Jodie Lynn.
Nudity.
And thank you for helping me pronounce your surname properly.
Great to have you. So exciting. And
Jesus Christ.
Looking forward to what the future holds.
Great.
A lot of great
Me
stuff
too.
Going on.
Less people attack the Alamo. Jesus Christ.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Go on. What were you going to say?
Come on, Jody. Don't be shy, Jody. Come on.
I just talked to Steve Vai, and I'm pretty...
So now it's gone from the emoji with the hearts in the eyes to this emoji laying in bed smoking a cigarette.
Well, after living in California, you know that any kind of connection. So technically, I'm friends with Steve Vai now.
You are.
Great. She wore out the guests.
So excited to have you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm not sure that stalker translates friend, though, Jodie. Then I've got to be honest. But if it sits well with you, that's cool. That's all good.
He's just invited us all round to watch Jason and the Argonauts at his house.
That's right.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. I'm going. I'm packing right now.
As a friend and comedian of mine once said, stalking's just talking with an ass.
Guys, please don't scare Colin off on the first time.
Colin just left the group.
I'm unplugging my
this
microphone.
Colin's management. Yeah. Oh,
just
shit.
Unfriended me.
Well, thank you so much, Jodie Lynn. And now welcome Dr. Stacey Montgomery, who has started a college internship program for the Sync Report. Welcome, Dr. Stacey.
Thank you. Well, Colin, it's so great to have you as one of the co-hosts. And I just wanted to say, I know that Kevin said his wife is a big fan. The Montgomerys, my husband and I, Mark, we are huge fans of Once Upon a Time. And he was just very jealous this morning that I got to connect with you today. And he's like, oh, please tell him I said hello. So I know you probably hear that a lot, but my husband was way, way happy about that.
Thank you very much. Did you hear that, Kevin? See? The husband's, you're allowed like it. You know?
Hey, I'm a big fan. I'm a big, big fan. I just didn't want to gush too hard. That's all.
I know you can gush.
Gush away.
Yeah, I gushed a little bit about that. I do love your accent. And then I'm really excited about our partnership with Cary College. We're expanding. We started in Ireland and we're going to expand to the U.S. Even though I'm in the U.S., we started in Ireland because that's where my brother is. So, yeah. And yeah, we're really excited about the new creative talent that is going to be coming from the college students that we're bringing to the Sync Report.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Have you got any spare PAs down there kicking around at all?
Stacey, where's Milfredo's intern? He needs an army, that guy. He needs help.
You know what? We can work on that.
Be careful what you wish for.
Paula got first dibs, right, Paula?
I'll be your PA, Milfredo. I'll do it for you.
Right.
Oh, Oh, look at the teamwork happening already.
That's why everyone loves Colin.
Yeah, we need more people.
Well, I didn't hear anyone else putting themselves forward. No, so I'll do it. I'll do it for you.
They know what a big job it is, mate. That's why. Are you still golfing, Colin? You still a big golf fan?
I've started. Yeah, I'm playing a little bit of golf. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you come over, mate, I'll take the Rolls. You know the Rolls Royce course down in Monmouthshire. It's the best course ever. So if ever you're way out west, down this way, give me a holler and I'll take you around, mate. No problem.
You're on. You can.
He hasn't invited me to play golf.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah, because Jason stuck up for you, just Paula. Yeah,
it's just like, I stuck up for you. I said the Uars from Herefordshire.
Thank you. Yeah. All right, you can carry our clubs.
It's my Christmas bonus for being his PA. So it's
right. That's a deal done.
The best course ever. It's grass. Get over yourself.
Stacey, it just sounds like such incredible work. So, and I'm delighted for everybody involved. So thank you for that.
Excellent. Colin, well, amazing for a guy that's just kind of stumbled into outer space, rolled up behind the Sync Report desk. Welcome and thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Jason. Thanks for having me.
He didn't just roll up. I brought him.
Hi, Edge. How are things?
Doing good, Jason. Thanks. So, you ready to start editing?
Always ready, thanks to New Monkey Studio, the ultimate recording facility.
Yep.
It's the first virtual studio I've ever worked with.
Well, we're not just virtual.
Of course you are. I'm in Ireland, you're in LA, we're recording.
Yes, this is true, but we are a full-service recording studio with some legendary gear.
Legendary? Wow, Edge, I think that's the most you've said to me since we started working together. What's this gear you're referring to?
Well, our mixing board was used by David Bowie, ooh, Rush, the Police, you know.
No way! I managed Andy Summers for a while.
Yep, he's in the Police.
Can anyone record at New Monkey?
Anyone? Sure. So, are you ready to edit?
Yeah, let's do that after, but tell us how we can find New Monkey Studio.
You can find us on Instagram at New Monkey Studio, and we have a website, newmonkeystudio.com.
You too can be cool like Edge and record with legendary gear in LA or from anywhere in the world at New Monkey Studio. That's newmonkeystudio.com. Ask for Edge.
Do you hear our guest today? Pull up a chair, you'll want to stay. It's conversation time, let's get underway.
Today we are joined by Steve Vai, an incredible guitarist, composer, and producer, considered by many as one of the greatest guitarists of all time. In more than 40 years in the music industry, Vai has sold over 15 million records.
Oh my God.
Received 3 Grammy Awards and recorded with music legends like Frank Zappa, Dave Lee Roth, Whitesnake, and many more.
Incredible.
Vai has also toured extensively and recorded live projects with G3, collaborating with different touring lineups, including Joe Satriani, John Petrucci, Eric Johnson, Yngwie Malmsteen, and Steve Lukather, as well as Generation Axe, a supergroup Vai formed with Zakk Wylde, Yngwie Malmsteen, Nuno Bettencourt, and Tosin Abasi. He has routinely transformed what would appear to be outrageously impossible into something possible, yet still also pretty outrageous. From his days as Frank Zappa's stunt guitar player to his more recent expansive and exploratory solo work, Vai has continually challenged notions of traditional guitar playing and composition, and on more than one occasion reimagined the instrument itself. Vai is the author of Vaideology, Basic Music Theory for Guitar Players, and without those credentials, he should be, and will begin an extensive 54-date tour of the US 2022 at the House of Blues in Las Vegas to support the release of his 10th solo album entitled Inviolate, a 9-song opus that does indeed push the boundaries of instrumental guitar music. I quite literally invented not just a new guitar, but also a new guitar playing technique. Some might say that Inviolate is his most focused, streamlined, and perhaps invigorating music in years. Let's welcome Steve Vai.
Steve Vai!
Yes. All right. Thank you, guys. Boy, what an intro. It makes me think who I am.
I'd hate to be his Wikipedia guy. That's just constant adding more, adding more.
We gave up on that a long time ago.
Well, welcome, Steve. Thanks very much for joining us. I can't wait to share your journey with everybody on today's show.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here. You guys got a really great thing going on.
And I'm going to jump in. I'm friends with Steve, so I'm going first. Is that okay, Colin?
Yeah, absolutely. Work away.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Steve, welcome to the show. I've been buzzing all day. I just couldn't wait to get in and travel this journey of yours, you know, with our audience. And you told some really cool stories to me about when you were very, very young and the first time you walked up to a piano and you had this discovery moment.
Yeah.
I think 6 years old we're talking. Is that right?
Yeah. It was a little before that because I got my first little spinet organ on my sixth birthday. So I was probably 4 or 5.
Oh, my God. And what happened? You see the keys and what is this? What is this?
Oh, it was one of those things where, you know, when you're a kid, you see this piano or a little organ or something at your grandma's house. And you're like, what is that? You know, and you weren't allowed to touch it, of course, you know. But one day I nobody was around. I started playing with and I was hitting notes. And I just noticed that when you go to the right, they go higher. And when you go to the left, they go lower. And I had this interesting kind of epiphany of sorts where I kind of intuitively seemed to have understood the infrastructure of written music, you know, where I could, it was sort of like an aha moment. So when I heard music, that's what it must look like. And that's, so that something became very clear, you know, the construction of composition. And then I realized that it's infinite, you know, you can
unbelievable.
Use your imagination and it's endless how you can control music with little black dots. So that was an instant kind of a recognition and inspiration, you know.
This is like 4 or 5 years old. Look, I took piano lessons and it was much later in life, maybe 8, 9, 10. I never had that moment. I never had that aha philosophical awakening that you experienced at 5 years old. And I mentioned the word prodigy and you recoiled from that. But I honestly, there must be something almost innate to your nature, to your DNA.
I wouldn't assume that I have anything more special of an understanding than musicians. You know, I think that experience that happened to me probably happened to you, but it was spread out. And for musicians, there comes a time of reckoning where you realize that I can make music. I can make any kind of music. It's all there for me. There's no real rules, you know. And I think this is a recognition that all artists or musicians have at some point. I think what makes a musician unique is what they do with that info, you know, is how they use their imagination to use those tools. The understanding is academic, but the individuality happens on that's an inside job too. Makes sense?
I don't know. I've been playing the guitar for 29, 30 years, and I'm still waiting for that realization.
Well, it'll come, my son.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll keep working at it. I swear one day we'll have the awakening. Look, Steve, you know, I connected with you when I was partners with David Lynch and working with the David Lynch Foundation. And so I really kind of at that moment when you were contributing and helping the foundation, really did like a deep dive into your music. And over again, I mean, it was just because at that time I wasn't really music supervising. I'd done a job or two, but always fantasized. But when I heard your music, I was just stunned. I was like, this is all music written for film or Broadway shows that haven't yet been made. But then when we were talking about your early life and what you were exposed to, because I know Steve as the guitar god, you know, but now going back to like when you were 6, 9 years old, you know, it's the accordion that you pick up. It's West Side Story that you're watching. Can you give us a little bit of insight on 9-year-old Steve Vai?
Well, I think like most people, the music I heard was coming in through other family members, you know, and the first was obviously my parents, and they listened to Italian polka music.
You know? Brilliant. Love it. Yeah. I love it.
So like all good Long Island Italian boys, I was forced to play the accordion when I was 9. But it was fine.
Steve, why do Italians always make their kids play accordions?
That's a mystery that belongs in the Guinness Book of Records or something. Yeah.
They always one kid that has to play the accordion.
Right. Yeah, I didn't do very well because it didn't have a whammy bar. I could play was 2 songs. One was Arrivederci Roma, and the other was Smoke on the Water.
Incredible.
I learned how to read music with the accordion, but they also brought home the music from West Side Story. And that dug really deep into me because it had all this compositional stuff and drama and theater. And I love theater. I'm a ham. I love to perform as much as I can while wielding the little notes. And then from there, it was into my sister's room. She had Led Zeppelin.
But that's a full orchestral piece. It's a classical piece of music.
Yeah, and that I didn't know anything else at that time. And when I heard that and the whole record, all the beautiful melodies, and you hear the intensity, and that's just the first little part.
Oh my God, the drama.
The drama, and they're fighting in the background, and there's love interests. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, now walk us into your, I'm sorry to say it this way, Steve, but walk us into your sister's bedroom.
Okay. Well, between then and the time that I started putting my ear on her door, my brother, we shared a room. He was bringing home stuff like Sly and the Family Stone and Creedence Clearwater Revival. And I was really digging that. But then when I was, I think I was 11 or 12, and I heard coming out of my sister's room, Led Zeppelin 2. Mm. And that was just it. I became like, I went into like a trance, you know, what is that? Mm. And when I heard the song Heartbreaker and that solo, that was it. I mean, I was like, okay, I'm going to somehow find a guitar and start playing it, even if it's my own little secret. It was
so
it.
What was your first guitar, Steve? Where did you find that?
Yeah, a friend of mine had this guitar hanging on the wall of his bedroom, and it was a Tesco Del Rey, and it was red, and it had 3 pickups and a whammy bar and all these switches. And I would just go over his house to look at the guitar, you know? And one day I said to him, you got a guitar. You actually have a guitar, an electric guitar with a whammy bar hanging on your wall. Why don't you play it? It's the only reason I come here to see the guitar. And he goes, what, that? I'm not going to play that. You want to buy it? I'll sell it to you for $5.
Oh my God.
And when he said that, It was surreal. You mean I could actually own a guitar? So I somehow got $5 and I got it, and that was it.
So what were you? How old were you at that point? 11?
12.
12 years old. I mean, and so now you have a guitar, but you already have skills from the accordion. You know, you're a born natural musician. How long is it before you get that guitar and you're actually playing in garage bands and gigging out?
Well, there was parallel musical worlds going on in my life at the time, because I continued to retain my interest in compositional music. And I started trying to compose very early on. Once I learned the accordion and I knew that, okay, that's a C and that's a, you know, whatever. I just started writing melodies and notes and songs in manuscript form. And that continued. And my desire to understand the written language of music was insatiable. And also when I was 12, that's 7th grade, I was allowed to enter a high school music theory class by this teacher, Bill Westcott. And Bill was just this brilliant guy. And he put me in a 12th grade class in seventh grade. And for five years, I took that class. And he just, I learned everything. I composed a score for the high school orchestra. But I learned everything about music. But then the alternate world was going on with the guitar, where I was sitting in my room with this little red guitar trying to play it. And every time I broke a string, I just didn't know what to do because I didn't have money for strings or anything. And a friend of mine.
Are you teaching? You're just learning on your own. You didn't have a teacher at that point?
I just had the guitar and I was just trying to figure it out. And a friend of mine that lived two doors down, John Sergio, who was a mentor because he turned me on to all the greatest progressive rock music of the 70s. He was playing the guitar, and I was stunned that he could actually play like Aqualung, you know? And I said to him, you must be the best guitar player in our town. And he said, well, if you think I'm good, you should see my guitar teacher, Joe Satriani.
Oh, my God.
So I got Joe's phone number, and by that time, I only had like two or three strings left on my guitar. You know? I got a pack of strings, and I went to Joe Satriani. And for 3 years, my lessons were my meditation. And interestingly enough, Joe was studying. We went to the same school. He was about 4 years older than me. And he was taking the same music theory class. But one of the things that I wasn't doing when I was learning the guitar, although I was learning all this music theory, was applying the theory to the guitar. You know, I just wanted to be able to play Led Zeppelin and Queen and all these rock songs. But Joe knew how to apply the theory. So that was one of the things he taught me through my teenage years. It was fantastic.
Oh, my God. Wow. Incredible. Oh, God. I almost need to take a breath. I'm spinning. That was just that's so cool. That's just so cool. All right. So at what point then are you forming bands? Are you joining bands? Do you become the cool kid in town that kills it on guitar and everybody wants you to play with them? What's happening in the teenage years?
Well, I grew up in a great little town called Carl Place, and it was kind of polarized with sort of nerdy people and greasers. Do you know
cool.
what I mean?
Sounds so, like my know, heaven.
The non-troublemakers and the troublemakers. And the first group I was in was called Circus, and it was with John Sergio, and it was the non-troublemakers. So we played all the kind of fun progressive rock stuff. And that was the band where I did my first gig at the high school. It was 13. And
so progressive, what are we saying? What are you playing?
Oh, we were doing like Queen and Jethro Tull and Nectar and, you know, kind of bands from that period. We even did Billy Cobham. And we did a little bit of Led Zeppelin. We did Bowie, that kind of thing. But then
so cool. I did, what a life.
Yeah, I did that for a little while. And then I joined a rock band that was formed by the Greasers. And that
brilliant.
Was like, yeah, that was really cool. That was like, now we're playing Kiss, Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith. Mm. And we were just terrorizing the clubs on Long Island. It was fantastic.
Oh my God, incredible. Race with the Devil. Do you want to give me a little?
Yeah, because as a kid that was enamored with the guitar, I just started, it was like a field day discovering all these incredible guitar players. So at first I was in the progressive rock field. So Jimmy Page and Blackmore and Brian May and all these great guitar players. But then I discovered fusion. And when Return to Forever came out, Romantic Warrior was the record. Al DiMeola was the guitar player, and he was like 19. And this guy, we could not believe what we were hearing, the way he played. It was unbelievable. So I jumped all over his music.
You know, you've mentioned Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page, and Brian May, and you seem to be friends and connected with all of these people now, all of these people who influenced you. Is there some kind of feeling like you have achieved your goals? There's a recognition of accomplishment with those connections? What is it like having idols that you now are friends with?
Well, at first it's kind of surreal and odd, but if you actually spend time with somebody, all that stuff goes away, you know, all the adulation, and you're left with the person. And although I haven't had an opportunity to get to know Jimmy Page. We've met on several occasions, and he was always just fantastic. But Brian May, we've become very good friends through the years. And there's always that place in me that just worships him, you know, because he was so important in my development. But there's another whole side that's, you know, Brian and Steve, the friends. And it's like any other friendship where you just, you know, that you get to know the person as opposed to the identity you created for them in your mind. But the real surprise came one day when I picked up a, I think it was Guitar Player magazine, and they have their yearly polls, you know, where the readers write in and they vote for best album, best this, best that, that kind of thing. And I remember the first time I appeared in there, I best new guitar player. So that was just unbelievable. Like my name is in the magazine, right?
Yeah.
And then I had gone on to win a couple of the awards through some years. But one year I was tied for first place. This was just, this kind of, it. In one way, it destroyed my faith in the voting public. Because I didn't believe it, but tied for first place for overall best guitarist with Jimmy Page.
Incredible. I would be split on that too.
I was just like, nah, this is none of this is real. It doesn't make any sense. What are the, you know, how could that, they don't understand. That's Jimmy Page. That I'm not, you know, it was just kind of in my mind. But that led me to think for the first time, there's people out there that are listening.
Yeah. And loving what you do. And I got to say, you are the exception, my friend. I can't even believe I can call you my friend. You have more talent in your pinky than 99.9% of the people I know. You have an incredible family. You've done such a great job raising your children. And you constantly give to artists. I've just, you know, through your label and through everything you do. Steve Vai, thank you. Thank you so much for your time tonight. Begrudgingly, I'm passing the mic to the glamorous, the brilliant Rose Ganguza.
But before you do that, I want to say to Jason, I had so much fun working with you, and you talk about charity. You were the guy. I mean, everything that you had done and were doing at the David Lynch Foundation and all of the interesting ways that you worked it out, promoting things and just supporting that, but most of all, the clever ways that you conceive creatively of marketing and stuff, and just the work that you do there. It was always great to work with you, Jason.
Steve, you're gonna make me cry. You just brought me back to the Desmond Tutu 85th
Desmond
birthday.
Desmond Tutu,
I could see you on stage playing with Incubus and everybody else, and. Yeah, you just, God, Steve, you're complimenting me, but it just makes me think of all the stuff that you do. You know, you just give. And
well, for all things, we made a good team.
I love you, Steve. Thank you.
Same here, brother. All right, Rose, how you doing?
I'm good, Steve. A fellow New Yorker. How did it feel to go from being a New Yorker to an LA guy?
Well, I was 20. That was 41 years ago. And I love New York, but California, I came for the work. You know, I came because Zappa was here. And right. At first it didn't matter. I didn't even open my eyes. I didn't even know what was around me. I was just like work. But then after, you know, some years, I love California. It's at first it's a real adjustment.
Eventually it grows on you.
There's a lot here.
So one thing that you didn't talk about with Jason, but you know, you obviously went to the Berklee College of Music. So I would assume in that transition period, you got more of a classical, you rounded out your classical knowledge in music. And it kind of leads me to your work with the great Walter Hill in the film Crossroads. And I just wanted to go, you know, use that as a way of getting into your work with film, and tell us a bit about that. That was 1986, and you played the devil's guitar player in that, and with a wonderful piece of music. Give us a little background on that and what the inspiration for that music was.
Oh, sure. Great. Well, I always wanted to expand my compositional skills and understanding of music, so I decided to go to Berklee from high school. And when I got there, I realized I knew Bill Westcott taught me everything. you know, but Berkeley was more focused on guitar and jazz. So that's where I cut a little jazz teeth, so to speak. But then, you know, I went after I left there, I moved out to California, started working for Frank. And then after Frank, I was living in Sylmar and had a little studio, and I recorded my first solo record called Flexible. And on it was a kind of a wild track called The Attitude Song that was released in Guitar Player magazine as a floppy disc. And Ry Cooder, who was scoring the film Crossroads, and I was a big fan of Ry, he called Guitar Player magazine and said, I need a hotshot young guitar player for this film I'm working on. And they played him The Attitude Song over the phone. And he said, that's the guy. And he called me up. Ry Cooder called me up. It was another surreal moment. And he came out to my house and he showed me the script. And they had been trying to create this dual scene with guitars.
Yeah.
And it was difficult because when you do something like that, unless it's really orchestrated, it's just a jam session. So when I read the script, and because I'm such a ham, you know, and I like theater and I like performance, I read it and I said, yeah, we could build this to make it look like a real duel. So we built the audio and it was fantastic. It just worked out great. And then I met Walter Hill. And it was funny because he came into the studio and he heard the first thing I play against Ralph Macchio was this train sound. It goes, rear, chung, gong, chung, gong. It's pretty cool. And Walter Hill goes, well, how is he ever going to win this duel? You know?
Yeah.
So then Walter asked if I would be interested in being in the film. And at first I actually said, well, thanks, but no. You know, I'm not an actor and I like acting, but I don't think I. And they asked me again, and I thought I read the script, and I thought, well, I could probably project this vile, evil character.
Yeah.
And we shot it. It took 13 days of 18-hour days. One of the things I discovered about shooting a film was, at least for me, I much prefer being a touring musician because you wait around for hours.
A lot of dead and then time.
You do like 13 seconds and they go cut. And then like 45 minutes later, you're doing the next scene. And I didn't even get my juices going, you know?
Yeah. So,
you know. And on stage, it's live. You know,
then you're going to hate the suggestion I have, because when we start playing your music, I'm going to tell Rose it's a Broadway play. So you're going to hate me now.
Oh, no. I love Broadway plays.
But a little bit of your inspiration was Paganini, right?
Well, for that, yeah. And in general, I've listened to Paganini. The script called for a performance that mixed Eugene, who was the other guitar player, his classical skills with blues.
Right.
So I read that and I thought, classical, okay, I need to write something that's very classical sounding line. So I pulled Paganini's caprices, which are just these fierce violin capriccios. And I think I pulled the first two bars of the fifth caprice or something. And then I continued with it and kind of wove in blues riffs to match the script.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
really, really amazing. And one of the great directors of all time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Kudos. What other film projects were you involved with after that?
Well, I liked the idea of scoring for films when I started, and I started to get involved with some. I did some stuff for Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, a film called Dudes, a film called Encino Man.
Yeah.
And little things.
Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
And little things here and there. And then I got offered an opportunity to score Miami Vice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this was a little later on. And I got together with the director, Michael Mann.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great director.
Great director. And I felt what it was like to be thrown back into that world, which is... It's a great world if it's the environment you thrive in.
But
And if you're a great film composer and that's your nut, you thrive well. But what happened with me was the demands are 24/7, and you're just taking directions, and you're also, you get to put your own spin on things, but there's a whole different set of parameters you have to work within when you're a film composer, as compared to just being an avant-garde contemporary 21st century kind of composer. So I pulled out of the gig. I don't want to score films.
Well, there are kind of two ways of approaching it. I mean, obviously, in your first iteration, when you were working with Walter Hill on Crossroads, you were actually, composing the music in scene, which is much more interesting than waiting till something is already shot and then trying to fit the music over it. Would seem like those are two different skill sets, and one might be more attractive than the other to somebody creative.
Absolutely. And there are various ways. And in that world, like many others, it's by any means necessary. You know what I mean? So when Bill and Ted's, they had finished the whole film and my stuff was in it, except for the last scene where it's the big guitar piece that saves the universe.
Yeah.
And they had something there, and I said, do you want me to redo this? It's not very good.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we got it. You know, it's good. I said, okay, fine. And 1 week before the premiere, they reshot the whole scene and sent it to me basically a week before the premiere and said, can you rescore this whole thing?
Of course.
And
the actors,
Keanu and Alex had already kind of faked it. You know, so I had to compose something that was a piece of music to save the universe.
Oh my God.
That worked with what they were faking on their fingers, you know?
So. Wow.
I heard hundreds of film directors' hearts break when he just said that he doesn't like to score, because this is what you do naturally, Steve. I don't know.
Yeah. It's very different brain muscles. Very different.
Yeah, it is.
I shouldn't say I didn't say I don't like to score. What I said is, I don't prefer to score for films. And some guys, I have friends that are so good at it. And it's just that when you're scoring for a film, there's a visual, which is nice, but there's parameters. You know, it can't be abstract, really.
And
I prefer to just.
So you
like,
just need to score your own films.
My own music, basically.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because your songs are freaking movies. I mean, when I heard this new album, it's a movie. It's a play. It's so beyond just the audio. It's incredible.
Thank you. Well, for instance, this May, I'll be in Holland recording 4 hours of my obscure orchestra music, the symphony.
Yeah,
I'm going to meet you there. I have an invitation, right? I can come.
Yes, you do. If you want to make the jump.
I'm coming.
Has any like desperate young filmmaker ever come to you and just pleaded for one of your pieces for their movie?
There's been people who've wanted to use my existing music in films.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Any musician.
I find that a lot of young filmmakers, their taste is bigger than their wallets. And they'll say, I've got to get this piece of music no matter what. And a lot of younger directors I've worked with, they're kind of bound and determined. And then they start stalking their musical heroes until they get a yes, you know? And that's always very sweet. And I always found that some musicians are very sympathetic to the plight of these directors who then go on to be big people, or they just sort of dismiss them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all types. I would be very, very interested in scoring a film where the director came to me and said, Steve Vai, I made this film and I know the kind of music you compose. And here's the film. Do whatever you want.
Right.
That would be fun.
That would be fun. Well, so that sort of leads to the next question about this original motion picture that you did called Crazy in 2008.
Oh, the whole team was going nuts over it.
All about the guitarist Hank Garlin. And you played a role in, you actually played an on-screen role in that film. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, Hank Garland has a very interesting story. He's a guitar player in Nashville through the period where all that early great stuff was being recorded with Elvis and Patsy Cline. He was a part of all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he has an interesting story. And my partner and I, my partner was actually very interested in making a film about Hank Garland. So so with that, I didn't do the music in it because it's a stylized piece. And it's not my style. We worked with really great people. But it did give me an opportunity to have a little cameo part as Hank Williams in the film. And a little interesting news I just found out 2 days ago is that movie, Crazy, when we had released it, we had won, the film had won first place in 17 different film festivals.
Oh,
oddly enough.
Crazy.
And it was just voted fourth best country film of all time by Rotten Tomatoes.
And it's a documentary. Wow.
Yeah, it's a documentary. It's a
documentary. Yeah, it's great. That's fabulous.
Yeah, that's
nice. As much as I don't want to do this, I'm handing the mic over to Colin O'Donoghue. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thank you, Rose.
Bye.
Thanks, Rose. Thank you. So, Steve, Greenish Blues is a bit of a departure from your typical style of guitar playing. What made you decide to include something like this on your album?
Oh, thank you. Now, it's not uncommon that I play bluesy, but I'm not an authentic type of a blues player. You know, I wouldn't be considered like a traditional type of a blues player. I'm too alien, you know. There's way too much quirk in what I do. But I love the blues, and that was the first musical scale that I learned, the blues scale.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more, I applied it more to rock. But that song came about in a sound check because we have this great policy when we're on tour that the band sound checks, and then I come onto the stage and they don't know. I pick up my guitar, which is hot, and they don't know what I'm going to play. I don't know what I'm going to play, but we're professionally recording it. And we just play, you know, they just follow me.
So,
At the end of the tour, I listen through everything, and some of it's real crap, you know, but some of it's like, wow. And Greenish Blues was right there.
Let's play a clip of it. All right, my friend.
Thank you.
That's not from a movie. I don't know what is.
That's the morning after.
So that was. So that came from just playing with the band on stage and listening back to it.
It was a jam. I brought it into the studio and sweetened it up, of course.
So that was like your starting point for Greenish Blues. And let's say something like Apollo in Colour. What's the process for creating that? Was it a similar thing? Or, you know, where did you start?
That one didn't come from a sound check. What I try to do is if I feel like there's some inspiration arising, like if I pick up my guitar and something comes out that has a little energy in it, you know, like a little jewel in it, I document it. And I've been doing that since I was 13. And I've got a guitar by my bed. And every night before I go to bed, I just twiddle about with it. And usually a little riff will come up that I think, there's something in that. And I record it and I put it on the shelf. So I've got thousands of these. And
I wonder what Pia thinks.
Well, sometimes you can hear on the tape on my phone every now and then she'll say, well, that's a good one.
I love her.
That one stinks. That stinks, you know. So I've got a peanut gallery. But Apollo in Colour, you know, I was going through these things and it was just there. It just probably the first 10 seconds of it, you know, I found I was singing the melody and just playing the chords. And then the DNA for the entire piece of music is in the one little snippet of inspiration. And that's how Apollo happened.
Well, I think we actually have a clip of this as well. Can you spin it for us, Manfredo? I mean, there's so much going on in that song. It's wild. So how do you decide, I mean, what sounds you're going to add or what instruments you're going to use? Have you got an idea of that, you know, fairly early on, or do you experiment, you know, when you're in the studio, decide, well, I want to try, I don't know, a sitar on this or an oud or something like that?
Yeah, I don't really experiment much. I usually know exactly kind of what I want to add, and the song tells you.
Prodigy.
No, it's not Prodigy. It's just common sense. Okay, so like it's the kind of thing where you just let the song tell you. You know, so for instance, it was a fiercely fast, you can't hear it, but there's a really fast strumming guitar underneath all that. So when I heard the melody, la 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 la, that tells you that you should have this and that and this supporting the atmosphere of what that melody is saying. So I think that that's not uncommon in the way a producer chooses to support a track or a melody. You let the song tell you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you say that it's sort of other people can hear it, but I'm not convinced. I think Jason's hit the nail on the head. But you know,
Thank you, Colin.
Yeah, I think so. But your new album will be coming out. So when will it be dropping?
I've got a good memory, but it's short. Okay, the new record in Violet drops on January 28th, 2022.
Well, I'm excited to hear it. I can't wait to hear it when it comes out. You know,
January and, the 28th.
January 28th, 2 days after my birthday.
All right. Oh, wow, that's lucky.
It'll be a 41st birthday present for myself.
Oh, so, very nice.
Yeah. 21st.
Unless you want the vinyl.
Oh, yeah. When's the vinyl come out?
The vinyl, we tried to synchronize it with the release of the record itself, but vinyl is so congested these days.
It's really congested.
Yeah. It takes months. So it's coming out a little later. I think
is it going to be colored?
What are you, March the 18th.
Is it colored?
Oh, we got any limited editions? There's some.
Oh, I'm definitely going to get the limited edition one. That's what I'm going to do. Colored vinyl.
I just approved the splatter.
Oh my God. Oh my God. All right, I want to be first to order.
You guys are too good to me.
There's a few more questions. I got to play a few more songs, actually. And I want us to play Teeth of the Hydra. But first, tell us about this crazy invention. We were talking about it during that pre-interview. Again, going back to the pre-interview, you have created an instrument like nothing before. You know, we've seen the double, the triple neck, but you have taken this to a new level. And it's functional. It works. It's not just beautiful, it's actually beautiful. It's hypnotic and incredible. Steve, what is the Hydra?
Ah, yes, the Hydra. Well, that was an idea that I got. I was inspired. I was watching Mad Max some like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's this one scene where they're driving through the desert. I think all the scenes they're driving through the desert.
Right.
In this one, there's this guy in front of a truck and he's playing this wild guitar.
Yeah.
And he's just flailing about and I'm looking going, that's cool. Somebody did something cool here, you know. But I looked at the guitar and I said, well, that's cool, but I got an idea. So I decided right at that moment the idea came, and it was, I'm going to have a guitar built that has three necks, a 12 string that's half fretless, a 7 string, and a bass neck that has the E and the A string fretless, and 13 Crazy. Harp strings.
Crazy.
And I was into steampunk fashion at the time, so I gathered a bunch of materials and I sent it to Ibanez, and they sent me a rendering of this guitar, and I just couldn't believe it. I thought, you're going to build that? And they said, yes, Mr. Steve. And it took about three and a half years, and I got this guitar, and they had added other features. They just went over the... I mean, it's a highly technical instrument.
You have a harp on there?
There's harp strings, there's a synthesized guitar section, there's sample and hold, there's piezo pickups, there's sustainers. I mean, it's really a high tech machine. And I looked at it and I thought, I know I have to write a piece of music with this thing, but wow, what am I going to do? You know, because The idea was to create a piece of music that sounded, that could stand on its own as a piece of music, but do right. it all on the Hydra in one performance. So when you hear the song, Teeth of the Hydra, the bass, the seven-string guitar, the 12-string, the harp strings, it's everything's the Hydra in one performance. So I had to navigate all my arms and, you know,
unbelievable.
To make it all work. And it took about
to
6 weeks.
To play seven, eight instruments at a time. Before we play this track, where did the name come from?
Well, I was a big fan and still am of really bad monster movies. Like Clash of the Titan.
Bro, or, one of my favorites.
Oh, okay. God, yes. I loved it. I remember when that movie came out, I didn't own a television, and I went out to buy a TV just so I could watch it on TV.
Oh, my God. I still want that Metal Owl. Oh, my God. I love that movie.
Right? Yes. One of the ones that really grabbed me as a kid was Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I love that film. It's
yeah,
so
well,
good.
Do you remember the Hydra?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Hydra is it's like a three-headed mythical Greek character that a dragon-like creature that you cut off its head and it grows another one or something.
Right.
So I remember that scene, and I had this guitar and I looked at it and I said, that's a Hydra.
Oh my God. How many times do I have to say it? He's so fucking cool. Oh my God.
And the teeth of the Hydra is from a scene in the film where the bad guy, after Jason slaughters the Hydra, the bad guy comes and he takes the teeth of the Hydra and he throws them on the ground, and from them spring the children of the Hydra, which are these skeletons that chase Jason and
right.
to kill yes! him. I love that part it's, of the film.
Ray Harryhausen, I mean, wasn't it?
At this point, Colin, Paula, Kevin, Rose, let's get popcorn. We're going to Steve's house. We're watching this film with him.
Jason and the Argonauts.
Hey, I have to say, wow. As a filmmaker, this is inspiring. I'm listening to every single Steve Vai album and record. Wow. We are going over there. Absolutely, Jason. Let's go.
Let's go. Clash of the Titans at the Vai's. And our audience, they're going to listen to Teeth of the Hydra. Come on, Milfredo. Oh my God. I honestly, I cannot wait to see that live, Steve.
Yeah, me too.
Are you nervous?
I'm excited.
I mean, this is a huge performance. I mean, that is.
Well, I have to learn how to play that song Peace. On that guitar standing up with the Hydra, which is
right
on it to itself.
Thank God you're fit, because I mean, honestly, I just listening to you, I need to take a nap. I know Milfredo wants a question of you, but before I just want to talk about Apollo in Color. I want to play this one last track off this new album. Steve, give us a little color for Apollo in Color.
Well, Apollo in Color is a name of a horse that my wife had. I just thought when I heard that name and I said, oh, that's a song title.
How did she come up with that name for a horse? What a beautiful
actually,
name.
Actually, that's the horse was named that before we got it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's a great name for a horse. So it just applied itself so beautifully to that melody in the song. And it's kind of a fusion-esque song. So I really wanted players that had a different kind of a approach. So I got Vinnie Colaiuta. He plays drums. And this bass player from Dirty Loops, Henrik Linder, this guy is just a freakazoid on bass. And he agreed to do it. And Dave Rosenthal on keyboards. And it's really an interesting little piece, I guess.
Milfredo, excellent. Are you going to chime in? Do you have a question for Steve before we let this poor man go?
Mate, what a great insight. But I know you're Vi Academy, and I know you're doing one in 2022 about Find Your Voice. Is that right?
Find
Your Note. Yes, yeah. So what, you know, are people, do guitarists find their note by developing what they've learned, or are you finding they're looking to do something new to break the mold, if you like? And yeah, without wanting to sound like a wisdom pop star, it's well documented that I think rock stars these days are shapes, not shapers. And I just wonder what your take on that is. You know, what are you finding people are wanting from this academy?
Well, I know that people that are interested in the guitar and playing it, they have different intentions. Some people are just interested in playing the songs that they like from other people, you know, and that's fine. That's great. A lot of players do that. And some people are professional musicians that just play other songs. And then there's people that write songs. And then there's guitar players that are attracted to a particular genre like the blues or jazz or these kinds of things. And they ensconce themselves in the aromas of a genre. This is all great, but finding your note, what I'm referring to there is your unique inner creative voice. Because what I notice is so many players would like to investigate that more, but there's obstructions. You know, the obstructions are peer pressure, what's new, fear of failing, yeah, you know, all these kinds of things that obstruct their ability to really allow their own, their real musical instincts, even if they're not accomplished players, that it's in there. It's in there.
Yeah.
So this is what I talk about, because my style is kind of quirky and it's not entirely genre specific, you know? And I developed it by accident. You know, I developed it by not believing that it mattered to anybody what I played. You know,
right.
So yeah, I just went, I like this, you know, and it just.
But that takes a lot of courage to step outside the box, doesn't it? To say, look, I don't care what you like. This is what I like and this is what I'm doing. And there's so many bedroom guitarists, bedroom DJs, bedroom who just think, you know what, I don't want to bare my soul to the world. And they just remain in that box, don't they? So it takes a lot of courage to do that, though, I think, don't you? Or.
Yeah, I think it varies depending on the person. Like what you just said was a perspective that I had when I was a kid. Like, I don't want to be famous. I remember when I was a kid, a little boy, my aunt said, people who become famous go insane, right? So I was like, okay, I'm not going to be, I don't want to become famous. So I was a bedroom player, you know? And then I guess the universe had different plans for me. But it's really the kind of thing where if you don't have a preconceived idea of having to fit in, then it's really, really easy to just find those things in yourself that you like and just build on them.
Right. Okay. And was your auntie right?
I can't be the judge of that. No. I gotta let other.
You're definitely not insane. He's not insane. He just has insane friends.
Yeah. Well, the night is young.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get a chance to talk about Frank Zappa. I mean, I can't believe all this stuff. This is the thing, Steve, you're going to have to come back because there's just so many things we had to skip.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. And it's been a real insight. It's been absolutely amazing. As somebody who has grown up loving the guitar, to get to speak to one of my guitar heroes has been an absolute honor and a pleasure.
Oh, so, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. You got a really cool thing going on here, and I'm honored to be invited to be a part of it. And, you know, anything Jason is involved with is interesting to me. But this, I think you got a tiger by the tail. So thank you and all the best.
Thank you to the amazingly talented Steve Vi for joining us on tonight's show. And for our listeners for spending your time with us. The TSR cast will be back in a week with your hosts, Colin O'Donohue and Rose Ganguza. Until next time, take care and be kind.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next week.